Sir, honorable members of the NCOP, and ladies and gentlemen, we gonna start now with our meeting because the minister have to rush to National Assembly quickly, so we don't have time. I'll start by saying, let's introduce ourselves. My name is Teboho Modise. I'm from the Northwest Province. I'm the chairperson of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Lindwe B.B. Umanqumalo. I'm a member of this committee from KZN.
Matibe Stareke, from Limpopo, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Armand Klute. I'm a member of this committee and from the Free State.
Good morning. My name is Andrew Arnold. I'm from the Western Cape, and I'm also a member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members of the NCOP. My name is Angela Thokozile Didiza, the Minister for Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, member of the ANC, member of the National Assembly. I would ask the team to represent themselves. We have got here the two teams from old Dr. DLR and old DAF. I'm saying old, both of them, because you know that in the macro organization of the state, they are now one. We also have got the officials from the ministry, and I'd like to tender the apology for the two deputy ministers. We have got a challenge, unfortunately, this morning. There is the voting on schedule in the National Assembly. So we split, and I said I'll start here, introduce the presentation, and then would also request if the chairperson and the members would allow that we leave for the NA, but the team will remain here and deal with the presentations in detail as well as the questions. Maybe for now the team can introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable. Thank you, Chair and Honourable members and Minister. Honourable Minister, my name is Mike Mlengana, the DG of the former or old DAF.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, DGs, acting DGs, everybody. My name is Mukutule Joe Kobokwe. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for policy, planning, monitoring, and evaluation. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, DG, and colleagues. My name is Rendani Fadiki, Acting Director General of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, SY.
Good morning, Minister, Honorable Member, DG, and colleagues. My name is Mimi Muluzi, Strategic Planning Director in the old DAF. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Good morning, Minister and colleagues. My name is Jacob Lajoyo. I'm the CFO of the old DAF. Thank you.
My name is Ivan Gambonane. I'm the legal advisor to the minister.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable minister, and honorable members, the colleagues. My name is Nomonde Munukwa. I'm the acting COO in the old Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Good morning, honorable members and minister. My name is Idibe Benenengserage. I'm the chief director at the Old DAF, responsible for inspection and quarantine services.
Good morning, Chair, Minister, honorable members, DGs and colleagues. My name is Pindi Wetingile. I'm the acting DDG, Economic Development, Trade and Marketing of the Old Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries.
Morning, Chairperson, Minister, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Lizanne Naran. I'm the Chief Director responsible for restitution in the Free State Province.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, to the Minister, colleagues, and the name is Nomfundo Ndloko Kobodo. I'm the Chief Land Claims Commissioner.
Good morning, honorable Chair, honorable Minister, honorable members, DGs, colleagues. My name is Alicia Stevens in the Office of the DG of Old DAF.
Good morning, my name is Ralph Sebifelo, Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, Parliamentary Office.
Members, Minister, Department and visitors, my name is Kobus Huster, I'm the Content Advisor of the Committee.
Good morning everybody, my name is Oscar Bauer, I'm the Committee Secretary, thank you.
Morning, Chair, Minister, Chair Mbasi Kutswa, Parliamentary Officer in the Ministry.
Good morning, Chair and Minister, honorable members. My name is Lucky Posa. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer to the Minister.
Good morning, Chair, Minister, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Mandla Sithole, PLO to Deputy Minister Lang.
Good morning, Chair, honorable ministers and members. I am Anuku, Research and Policy Unit Department, DM's Office.
Now we know each other. Without wasting any time, Minister and your team, you are welcome to this meeting. We did receive an apology for Honorable Dlamini as Honorable Scott. Deputy Minister Dlamini said he is not well, and then Scott is going to the AA for the voting. Without wasting any time, ma'am, can you start to brief us, and then at any time you can leave. I know you will leave us with a capable hand. Thank you very much, Chairperson, as well as the members of the committee, the senior officials, the support staff of the committee. Maybe our presentation, I must start from the beginning, that is anchored on the appreciation of what the President outlined in the State of the Nation address. And that relates to the seven priorities that he identified that the sixth administration of government will focus on. But we've looked at what those seven priorities say in relation to agriculture and land and rural development. For us, one of the key things that came out was the role of agriculture as one of the priorities that will contribute to the economy as well as job creation. Second is how land as a multifaceted function that supports both economic growth as well as social development should be addressed. That related to what he said as the speedy release for land for human settlement as well as for agricultural development. And therefore we took a cue from those. But it's important for me to say to honorable members that in our presentation today of the APPs, we still reflect the APPs as it was agreed to, which will then reflect to the old Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries,
as well as Department of Land Reform and Rural Development. But we will also try to indicate where we are going to tweak towards the new direction. One of the important things, again, which is important for me to start with, is what the new reconfiguration of the state will mean for our department. There's two things that currently we are engaged on, led by the Presidency and the Public Service Commission, on that reorganization. On one hand, the Department of Agriculture would actually be migrating two functions, which is fisheries and forestry, to the Department of Environmental Affairs, which is now going to be Environmental Affairs, Forestry, and Fisheries and Forestry. We have already had a memorandum of understanding between myself and Minister Creasy, so that even from now we start to manage that migration, both in terms of decision making as well as operation. We've got two teams that are working at an administrative level to start to delineate the functions supported with the staff and the budget that will have to go to the new department and also what remains with the Department of Old DAFF. So that process is ongoing, and we've been engaging labor because, as you know, that when any process happens of this nature, it necessarily raises alarm to anybody who's an employee wanting to know whether or not am I going to be affected, what are the conditions of service where I'm going, or if I remain, am I in a secure position, and so on. So we are managing those issues. We are also at the same time working together with the old Department of Land Reform and Rural Development, together with the old Department of Agriculture, to work towards the merger. You will see on the presentations, honorable members, that actually with the two departments, there were areas of, I would say, duplication and overlap. And I think we would then be looking at how we align those in support of the sector in a meaningful way. If you look at the budget of land reform and rural development, particularly rural development, that's where you see the rural enterprise development unit and the rural infrastructure unit, which dealt with both, you know, infrastructure on and off farm, but also supporting enterprises of agriculture in nature, some of them non-agriculture. You'll also see that part of our proactive land acquisition dealt with the settlement of people who are in agriculture. So some of those functions, as we are working towards the measure, we'll be looking at how we align them with the work that the Department of Agriculture is doing in terms of farmer support. It is also important for me, honorable members, to indicate that even with this reorganization, currently land is a national function with provincial footprints in terms of our provincial offices. On the other hand, agriculture is a concurrent function. So in national level, we deal with issues of policy, we deal with issues of international relations, export and import, and managing issues of tariff, working with DTI, while on the other hand, the actual farmer support is a provincial function. So we've agreed with the MEC to actually set up a very strong intergovernmental relations system so that we can agree on, you know, policy, you know, alignment, and what are the critical areas needed for support from national to the province. I'll just make one example. When it comes to biosecurity, though the provinces have got the competence of, you know, agriculture in the province and support, when a disease strikes in one province, it doesn't know the border. It will go to another province or another province. And if you don't have a very strong veterinary services, you can compromise your international trade, particularly when it comes to export, as we've seen with the foot and mouth outbreak last year in the part of Limpopo. And therefore, as part of our work at national level is to see how provinces really, in terms of the investment of the resources that they get, they do pay attention on some of those issues. But we've also been engaged with Treasury that we will require some support to assist us to manage certain areas like your foot and mouth red line, which cuts across three provinces, which is Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and KwaZulu-Natal. Because of the international impact that that will have on our agricultural exports in particular. So biosecurity, we've taken it as a very important area of our work because of the risks that are involved both in plant and animal health in our country, dealing with issues of management of the ports, you know, because of the entry of food. So on those areas, we also work with other border management ministries to look at how we strengthen our border management and the impact on food security in particular. We've also got entities, and you'll see when the departments present, those entities report to agriculture and land, and they're very critical for the support of the work that we're doing. For instance, the deeds registry. It's a very critical function that is important and very central in ensuring that we record the land rights that are there in our country. And you will see, as the acting DG will be presenting, that's one of the areas where we are going to be looking at developing policy for transforming the deeds registry supported by Kenya legislation so that even the unrecorded rights in communal areas can actually be recorded. Issue of Surveyor General is very key, not only in the Department of Land Affairs, but across government, in terms of the delineations and the borders of land as an asset. Issue of the OVG, the Value Office of the Valuer General, is a very important instrument created by statute, whose main aim was really to look at how we deal with issues of valuation, both in terms of public and public interest. As you know, that there were constraints or concerns on the land prices, particularly for land reform and restitution in particular. However, you will see as the team presents both restitution and land reform, that because of the lack of capacity at the moment in that office, it has had a negative impact on the speedy, you know, settlement of claims in particular. Because if you look at that legislation, it says all land that is bought for land reform purposes must use the office of the Valuer General. And that has created a little bit of a delay, and as the Restitution Commissioner presents, she will indicate that we've actually reduced our target, taking into consideration the slow pace of, you know, work in that office. We've also agreed that we would look at how we capacitate that office, but at the same time look at the issues that have been raised in terms of a legal challenge, whether or not such an office has the final decision making or its role is regulatory or its role is recommending to the minister. So we're taking all of those things into consideration as we look at strengthening the capacity of that office. In agriculture, we've got four entities that report to us: the National Agricultural Marketing Council, whose major responsibility is really to advise the ministry on the market opportunities, but also what are the market constraints, so that in the way in which we design policy and instruments of support to farmers, we are conscious of the market trends. They have also, you would look when the Department of Land Affairs present, some of the work that have been done in relation to creating market opportunities where they've worked with them on the livestock support in particular. On the support biological products, this is an entity that produces a vaccine for animal diseases, and it might be good to just indicate to members that actually the evolution of this body was a directorate in the Department of Agriculture. It used to do this work, but it never sold directly to the public. It used to go through an intermediary. At some stage it was Bayer and so on. And there was a time at which we went and approached cabinet for the corporatization of that unit, which happened successfully. And now OBP is actually an independent vaccine production entity, which is sustainable, no more funded by the state, but still support the work of the state. Agricultural Research Council is one of the entities that reports both to us as agriculture as well as the Ministry of Higher Education and Science and Technology, because it is also a science council. Its primary role really is about agricultural research, helping us to look at, you know, new varieties and development of, you know, new cultivars in plants and also in animal production, and enable us to be on the cutting edge in terms of the sciences in the agricultural sector that supports our agricultural economy. With respect to the mandate of the Science Council in terms of science and technology, they've also been involved in training and supporting, working with the higher education institutes of agricultural research scientists. So we've produced some directorates. We may not be conferring the degrees, the university may be doing that, but those students have been supervised by our officials at AFC. And one of the interesting innovations that ARC have just come up with, which the departments will actually share, has been to respond to the drought situation in our country by producing one of the maize seeds that is drought resistance or water scarce, which can assist communities in water scarce areas. So it's one of the important innovations that one can just find. We also have got the Perishable Products Export Council. That council actually works very closely with the farmers in ensuring that they help prepare them for export. So they look at the certification and actually ensure that whatever gets exported in terms of perishable products is actually in good stead. We are going to be going forward, as you'll see on the presentation, looking at how we strengthen our monitoring on provincial transfers. And I say this because part of your role as NCOP members is really working with provinces but also with municipalities, because you've got the representative of SALGA. One of the constraints that has been raised with us in terms of the division of revenue, particularly your comprehensive agricultural support program, has been the weakness from the National Department in the monitoring of that fund, whether or not the business plans that get presented to us by provinces, when they go down, doesn't actually do that work where they said they will do. So what we have decided is that we will build the capacity at National and actually have resident, you know, monitoring teams in the provinces. For now, because of the resources, we'll start with 9. One per province, who will really go physically on those areas where the provinces have said, this is what we will do, where we will do, so that we can intervene in time if there are deviations, instead of only hearing that at the end when the Auditor General does his work, or as members of Parliament, you go then come back and say to us, but what you said is there, it's not there. So that's one of the areas that we thought it's important for us to strengthen in terms of our provincial transfers. But also, we said to ourselves, we need to work very closely between the Department of Agriculture and our provincial footprint of land reform and rural development, so that there is no misalignment in where farmers will approach us and say, can you assist me in buying land in this location, and you find that the Department of Agriculture in the province, that's not the area of their priority, it's going elsewhere. So on one hand, you've got a farmer with an asset, but the support from agriculture doesn't come. So we need to find a way in which we can have that alignment across the board to ensure that when we say we're supporting a farmer here, we actually do it. The other area is what is a concept of AgriPath. And maybe some of you who might have been in the previous administration might have heard about that, or if you're in the provinces, I'm sure would have heard about that. This was really a critical intervention on what is it that we can do to change our rural landscape. One was to say we may not be everywhere, anywhere. We'll focus on the district and create a system that will be able to support agricultural production in a concerted way, where we can have various elements of support with the food production support unit, which will actually be a center, a service center, if I may call it, where farmers can be able to get mechanization support, input supply, be able to get extension service on site, those services that a farmer requires. And if you have got a critical mass of the farmers who are producing a particular commodity, work with the commodity organization to actually create either a local processing center, storage capacity, a sorting, so a big hub that will support that agricultural unit. Good intervention. So we started, and unfortunately in that starting we were kind of like everywhere, anywhere. We started with food production support unit, we put some infrastructure on, you know, a hub, agricultural hub, and you found that functionally there's minimal. In certain areas we had just secured a piece of land either from a municipality and put a fence, nothing is happening there. So what members were saying is that, yes, this is a good thing, but we're not seeing what is happening on the ground. So what we have decided, and I'm happy to report to members, that one of the things we've agreed as this new department is at least this functional, this financial year rather, we will have to identify 27 food production support units. So that instead of being everywhere, let's start with the food production support unit and work with the farmer so that, yes, you can have production happening that can then feed to the next stage instead of putting a hub here, putting a support unit here, all of which don't work. So we are actually going, you'll see that in the presentation from the team, that we're trying to align. Actually, yesterday, we had a meeting of both teams, including the provinces, to actually say, let's agree which are the 27, where we'll start, and what will be a functional food production center. Let's agree so that there's a standard. We've said any food production support unit, one must have at least four critical personnel that will be resident and work with farmers on a daily basis. An extension service, veterinary service official. If we can't have a full-time vet, let's have an animal technician who will be there on site, can work with the vets in the province and nationally. Thirdly, we must have an agronomist who will be on site, or a plant health if we don't have that relevant capacity in the province. And fourthly, we must have someone who will actually assist in the management of the center, look at the resources and so on. But fifthly, we also said we will need a distribution center of your vaccines so that OBP must actually have a presence in that center. We then said each of those centers must have a mechanization support, be it planters or tractors, and have a driver as well as a functional service center that will manage the mechanization, you know, when it's broken, whatever. You know, if I were to call it a la NTK Cooperati of old, which has got everything together, so that a farmer who is in Lomondo in Venda doesn't have to go all the way to Louis Trichard just to buy a pack of seed. That must be there. So it will require us working with industry as well as the farmers on the ground so that we can respond to what they need. Not bring orange seeds in an area where people are farming maize. So we'll have to do a lot of working with the farmers ourselves, together with the commodity organization. Why commodity organization? Because in an area where you have got a dominant commodity, and those people can supply to the market, it's important to work with our commodity organization so that both in terms of technical support specific to that commodity, they can actually be of help in terms of advisory services, but also in terms of the market information, which will assist those farmers to know where are the markets for that dominant commodity. But we said you can't be exclusive. That's why we are saying at least you must have four resident officials who will be there, so that if a small farmer who's doing just for food security but will need to manage the health of their goat, they must find an animal scientist there, so that you don't have centers that are not responsive to the needs of the local community. I just also want to say, with respect to restitution, you will note, apart from the targets that I've said we are going to put down a bit, we are at a stage that the remaining claims that were lodged since 1998 after the promulgation of the Land Restitution Act, there are now one of those major complicated ones. And I appreciate we all would like to see speedy resolution of the claims. And it's important for me to highlight that we do appreciate, and we appreciate because we work in the industry. We know that if a farmer's farm has been gazetted and designated for restitution, it actually creates a challenge for investment for that farmer when the farmer doesn't know when will this process finish. So we know that that has an impact on the investment, but also on the economics in the area. But the challenge that we're facing now, apart from the valuation, the challenge that we face is actually having a negotiation with the claimant about choices. Because what do you do if somebody claims Cape Town? I'm just making Cape Town as an example, the city. And you can prove that indeed these people were moved here. How are you going to restore the city? Very difficult. How much value can government pay for restoration on monetary value of the city? Very difficult in terms of our budget constraints. But where are the alternative areas around Cape Town that you can tap in? So there are those issues that when dealing with such claims, you really have to navigate all of these minefields. One such case we have is in Mthatha, where the city, part of the city, is being claimed. So I'm saying what you'll find is that maybe in the resolution of some of these claims, there will be a bit of a slower pace because of their complexity. If I were to make a case on Fish River Fund, that claim that covers the Fish River, we thought we had settled the claim, and the claimants started fighting about where the Fish River is located, one saying, no, we were here, and the other says, we were also here. So they've taken each other to court. So that matter has stalled. So there are those issues, and I think it's important for me to share with you those realities so that as members of the committee, when you engage with us, when you require accountability from us, on why are you not moving at a pace and maybe concluding everything you said you'd conclude, you must appreciate that what we have remaining is that problem. Secondly, we've got legacy issues with respect to the land claims. Some of the claims were concluded, but part of, you know, the support and the finalization of that claim did not happen. And those are some of the matters that we are facing now, which we have to deal with. But other claims you'll find, and I'll use Livubu as a case in point, where about 10 landowners agreed and the claim was settled. But 25 of the landholders are still negotiating with us. So that claim, you'll find that in some of the claims, it's a one claim, but we've done it in phases. So we have relieved those farmers and compensated them, but we are still negotiating with the others that are remaining. So you may wonder, why are you counting Livubu once? You say Livubu finished, but Livubu is not yet finished. I think it's important for us to understand that concept. But I want to also close with last matter, which I know members are all familiar with, the issue of CPA. You know, CPAs were, and I think it's important, when that legislation was put in place, was really to assist the communities who have received land in groups to be able to have a holding entity that manages that land. So defines the governance, how that land will be managed through a trust, who will hold the land in trust on behalf of the communities. But what we have experienced and what you members yourselves have experienced are the difficulties in the functioning of those CPAs. The human dynamics that come at play, where you'd find that sometimes CPAs or the trust of the CPAs don't understand their fiduciary responsibility to the community. They actually think they are now the and be all. They don't consult the members of the community about how this land must be governed. Sometimes where contracts are entered with third parties on how that land could be utilized, which is good, but you find that there's no reporting. Sometimes the issues of dividends are not there. The issue of Matulini that we have, which has been very topical in the past week, the issue of Mangete in KZN, which has been very typical, topical that we have seen in Limpopo, Moremi, it's one of those areas. That just shows the difficulty that we're having. What the previous minister, my predecessor, had done was to pilot a legislation to really relook at the governance of those CPAs and the responsibility of the state. Because I think the way it was crafted, the state was not given a capacity to be able to intervene where is the problem on behalf of the communities. In some instances where the state tried to intervene, they were actually told that you have got no jurisdictions here, we have. And that created difficulty. So it's one of the issues that we really like to fast track again in terms of legislation in this administration. But we have not only just relied on legislation, we are having a unit within the Department of Land Affairs that is engaging and working with the communities, you know, to really try, one, and train the CPA trustees so that they know their work, but also to ensure that we engage with the communities so that they can hold these structures equally accountable. But it's not an easy matter, and I must just be honest with you. It's not an easy matter, but it's a matter that we have to engage with. The other matters, I think the department team will deal with them in detail. I just thought it's necessary for me just to give a helicopter view of both departments and the entities and on what we are doing. Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. It was a little bit long, but I thought it was necessary to do so since this is our first engagement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. You are released. You can go. You will remain with your department. I hope you have covered a lot, but they will be able to... Yes, because they are the implementers. Thanks, ma'am, for coming. We really appreciate that your effort. Now we are going to give the to. Rural development, because of time, members, we've got two votes. One department, but two votes. So at least let me give you 30 minutes for presentation so that members can be able to ask you a question. I think the minister covered a lot. We can summarize. But you must give us the details.
Okay.
Means, the more information, I think the minister dealt with it.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the chairperson and to the members.
Yeah.
Okay. As I come to the... fine. You can do it. Okay. Thank you. The minister has already basically summarized the whole presentation. So I will just run to the targets on the annual performance plan. We have started with the MTSF targets for 2014 to 2019, just to summarize how we fared against the targets. And you can see that almost all but one was not achieved for specific reasons that we have indicated there. Can we move to page 4?
Ma'am, because we are representing the provinces, maybe when you present, just you must be specific to
yes.
the provinces so that we must know what is happening at our provinces.
Thank you, Chair. I think at the MTS level, F level, we did not dissect it into the province. We're just showing a helicopter view of the last 5 years, how we fared. But now when we come to the performance targets for this year and the MTF period, you will see that we have put them in terms of the provincial targets. So the matter of the payment of invoices within 30 days, it has been elevated to the departmental performance plan because we all know how what the treasury regulations requires in for us to be able to support the SMMEs on the ground. So we have put it as a target in administration that we would try as to we will pay the service providers within 30 days. Of presentation of a valid invoice. Last year, financial year, the target was 100%, and in this year, it's also 100%. And that applies across the organization in every province where we're rendering service. This target applies. On the unqualified audit opinion, it's again a target for the whole organization. We want to get an unqualified audit opinion while we do our work. It's only coming on the second quarter of the year because the first quarter the auditors audit and then they issue their opinion by the 31st of July. Program 2, which is our geospatial and cadastral services, we want to develop a land use master plan that would be used to facilitate effective implementation of land reform programs. It's a new indicator, Madam Chair, and we, in terms of the quarters, first quarter we will do the synthesis report, second quarter the diagnostic report, and we'll do the stakeholder engagement. In the third quarter and fourth quarter we'll draft the land use management plan. It's a national target, so it won't be done at a provincial level. It would be done from at the head office. The National Spatial Development Framework, it's a new indicator. We want to implement at the end of this financial year the National Spatial Development Framework strategy. First quarter, stakeholder engagement. Second quarter, we'll do the submissions for approval. And third quarter, we'll be drafting the strategy, and in the fourth quarter, we'll be implementing the NSDF strategy. Again, this is a national target. It will be run by our SPLAM, or Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Division at a national level. Percentage deeds made available within 7 days from lodgement for execution. That percentage applies to all provinces where we have our deeds registry offices. 95% would be the turnaround time, the target that we have set, that once you lodge within 7 days, we should be able to register, execute your lodgement. This transformation policy, that's where the minister was talking about the length rights recorder that we want to bring in, because we know that our Deeds Act provided for a certain group of South Africans. It was not for everyone. So we want to bring in the transformation, because you know that the act that is currently applicable is the 1937 Act. So we want to transform that. And we have, we're saying the target is that by end of 2020, the transformation policy will be approved. And in terms of the targets, we first quarter we have done the policy discussion document. Policy research report will be issued end of second quarter. The socioeconomic impact assessment and policy refinement in third quarter and fourth quarter, the policy will be approved. This will also be done at a national level by the legislation division within the department. Average number of working days taken to process registrable diagrams, sectional plans, and general plans. This is by the Surveyor General that the Minister was talking about. And that those diagrams assist us in issues such as creation of townships, sectional titles and sectional schemes. We will approve that within 14 days across the country. The number of state lands parcels surveyed, we want to survey, it's a new indicator, we want to survey 1,500. It used to be there previously, but because of budgetary constraints, we started to phased it out because we thought actually the department should, across the state, should be able to pay for these services. Mm-hmm. But we have seen that departments are not doing it. So we have tried to put it back, and we have only selected Limpopo for this financial year. Again, it's issues of limited financial resources. So we are not able to go fully fledged on this. We know that for a property to be registered at this, it should have been surveyed. So we're going to do 1,500 in Limpopo, and first quarter we have no target, second quarter 300, third quarter 300, and 500 on the fourth quarter. On rural development, we start with rural infrastructure development. We've got number of infrastructure projects completed. You see last year we had 80, and this year we have increased to 122. Most of these, what we have now brought as a strategy is to say let's concentrate on finalizing all those projects that have been carrying over, because we had many of those, and that's what contributed to a bigger number. It's to try and complete the things that are on ground that have been carry over projects. And you will see the spread down there of the 122 that we are doing this year. 15 will be coming from Eastern Cape, Free State, 8 projects, 15 in Gauteng, KZN, 30, and the like. In infrastructure projects, they are divided. You will see when we present the finance report that there are different types of infrastructure projects, such as the agri-hubs, or the social infrastructure project, or the FPSU project, but they are properly indicated, including their numbers on the finance presentation. A number of rural enterprises supported, which would be both agriculture projects and non-agriculture projects. We have also increased by to 227. And we've tried also to indicate that we are also now prioritizing women and youth. You will see that of the 227, 100 will go to women, and 20 we have put them aside for youth. And the first quarter will be 21, second quarter 88, third quarter 96, and fourth quarter 22. And underneath there we've got the provincial target for those projects. The number of farmer production support units, Minister indicated what are these when she was doing the presentation. We want to prioritize 27, and it's a new indicator. We have not had it. We have always had agri-parks, but we said let's rather break down what are these agri-parks and what would be a priority for us to get to the agri-parks would be the farmer production support units, where all the farmers will be supported in terms of implements inputs, training skills, and we're saying we will do 27, we will complete this year, and that is the spread underneath with KZN already targeting to finish 10 of those in this coming financial, in this financial year that we are already in. Number of skills development opportunities provided in rural development initiatives. We've got, last year we had 6,864, and we have increased that to 7,465, with enterprises training 3,486, of which women will be 2,000 and 1,200 youth. RAID and NARISEC, 2,000 and 1,079 respectively. And we've got the targets per province underneath there. Number of job opportunities created in rural development initiatives. So in all, whether we are building infrastructure or we're providing support for enterprises, we prioritize the creation of jobs opportunities. And last year we targeted 5,191. This year we are increasing to 5,909. And there is the spread per quarter and per province. You will see that KZN seems to be taking the lead, but you also see even in terms of budget allocation, they are allocated a bit more because of the number of districts that they have and the poverty nodes that have been plotted in KZN. Number of land claims finalized, last year we had 991, and you would have seen that when we presented our fourth quarter report for the last financial year, we couldn't achieve those. The minister has already indicated that the impact of the Valua General Office is what is making us not able to achieve the targets for restitution. So this year we agreed that we will scale a bit down because it doesn't help to put the target high when you know that with the limitation that we have in terms of the Office of the Valua General, we are not able to achieve that. And the spread per quarter and per province is as indicated there. Number of land claims settled, again we scaled down from 151 to 428, and the reasons are same, the Office of the Valua General having a negative impact in our operations. In Program 5, which is the land reform program, which has two sub-programs, being the land redistribution and the land tenure and administration. In the land redistribution, we have the land acquisition and the land development support. On the land acquisition, we acquire hectares for that we lease on a long-term basis for agricultural development purposes. We had targeted, we have targeted 94,000 hectares for acquisition versus the 89,000 which was the target for last year. And the first quarter is 14,000, 32,000, second quarter, and third quarter 37,000 hectares. And the last quarter we think we'll just be finalizing, we'll acquire 9,000 hectares. And there is the hectares. You would see that Gauteng takes the smallest. It's not easy to get land availability in Gauteng. The land that we acquire, we then target to redistribute a percentage, 50% of that we give to smallholder farmers. So we have targeted 40,500 for last year, and this year it's 42,750. Hectares that will be allocated to smallholder farmers, and we've got the allocation per province underneath there. Smallholder, number of smallholder beneficiaries, allocated land is a new, the previous target was per hectare, and this now targets the number of farmers that must benefit on the land, and we think we're going to give at least 89 farmers land, with female getting 22 and youth 9. And we were still discussing, Chair, on whether we must not increase the number for the women, because it's very low, extremely low, and we had agreed that we would try to push to at least 50% of that. So we will still amend this and bring it back and to try and prioritize women. Number of farms supported through the land development support, 166 farms. These were selected already last year. We are at an advanced stage of now, work has already begun in most of these farms. We have prioritized mainly grains, followed by the red meat and the fruits and vegetables. And then we have other commodities still there, but not really so prioritized. Number of households supported under the One Household, One Hectare program. This is the program the minister was talking about that we met with the team of both agriculture and land reform and provinces yesterday to try and see how do we massify production mostly in the communal spaces. This is the program that targets the communal spaces where we helped. We help with food security issues. And we have targeted 2,656 households, of which female is 1,328 and youth 266. So here you can see the spread is much better than the giving of the farms. And per quarter, we've got first quarter 473, 805, second quarter 911, third quarter and 467. We again have the spread per province down there. There's CPAs or the Communal Property Associations that Minister was talking about, that we have serious issues there. We assist them with becoming compliant with legislation, and we have targeted 443. The challenge here is you regularize this one this year, and next year you move to the other one. The one that you were dealing with this year regresses. So it's always, you are like going around in circles, because once you move, the other one goes back. Number of labor tenants applications settled, we have a target of 3,666 compared with 1,947. This is a target that will not continue to move. We have about 10,000 that are remaining to be settled. And once we finish, this target will move out of the APP. And you will see that of the whole target, about 95% belongs to just two provinces, being KZN and Mpumalanga, because that's where the biggest applications were received from for settlements of labor tenants and farm dwellers. And in terms of the hectares, we think we'll buy them at least 8,750 hectares. It looks small, but it's because we also settle them using all the other programs. In restitution, you'll find that as we settle their labor tenants, they are farm dwellers, so they are also catered there. In land redistribution, as we lease out the farm, and the farm dwellers and the labor tenants also benefit. But then there's also in LTA where we also just specifically target them. And per quarter, we have 1,125. In quarter one, 1,875 hectares. Quarter two, 2,900 in quarter four. And that will be it on the annual performance plan. Chair, I don't know if I should take the finance, or this is just...
Okay, no, thanks.
DG, I think you can continue with the finance.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members and colleagues. I'm Violet Machida. I'll be presenting the financial allocations that have been aligned with the APP that ADG was presenting. In terms of slide 2, we are showing allocation, total allocations for provincial offices. As you know, that the department has got allocation of 10 billion. 7 billion is going to provinces. So in terms of the highest allocation from slide number 2, it's KZN and followed by Limpopo and Northwest. That's where, in terms of our land claims, restitution claims, infrastructure projects, in terms of those three, you'll be able to see when I'm presenting the program allocations that shows that why these three provinces are having higher allocations compared to other provinces. In terms of slide number 2, is just a graph that shows the slide per province that represents the same slide number 2. Slide number 4 is showing economic classifications for the same provincial office where 3.8 billion has been allocated in terms of household, which is transfer. Within the department, the cost drivers for us is household item in terms of classification, while salaries we are going to pay 1.6 billion and goods and services is 1 billion. Within goods and services, there are items in terms of SCOA where we are procuring within the department for REIT, rural infrastructure project and rural enterprise projects. They are allocated within goods and service and machinery and equipment where we buy tractors for our beneficiaries. Slide number 5 is just the same graph that represents the previous slide. Slide number 6 is showing in terms of program 3, within program 3 we've got rural infrastructure and rural enterprise development and NARISEC. So in terms of rural infrastructure, total allocation is 755 million for all provinces, while you'll be able to see in terms of KZN, the highest allocation based on the other projects that we moved with from last financial year, and also Eastern Cape where we've got allocations that are higher, also depending on the projects that we moved last financial year where we are on site in terms of implementation. The next slide, which is slide number 7. In terms of animal fat management program, which is the second column in terms of target, we've got 30 projects, and then KZN with 79 million allocation for AVMP. And then we also, all these 30, these are the projects that were already approved last financial year. We just carry through to current financial year. And then in terms of the new projects, we've got 13 projects that are costing 24 million in terms of AVMP. River Valley, Catalastic program, we've got 12 projects, which is only KZN that we carry through from last financial year, and one project which is new from Northern Cape project, Northern Cape province. Social program, within this program, we've got 23 projects, where 15.3 million is Limpopo, and 14.7 is Gauteng, where all these projects we carry through from last financial year to 2019 financial year, while we got only 3 new projects that have been approved for this current financial year. In terms of the FPSU, these are the projects that the minister also was talking about. We've got 3, we've got 7, that is costing 95 million for this financial year that are carrying through from 18-19 financial year. When we go to slide number 8, that's where we'll be able to see AgriHub carry through from last financial year, which is having 5 targets, that is costing the department 74 million, while in terms of the new agri-hub projects that have been approved this current financial year is only 9, costing 49 million. And then in terms of skills within this program is only done at national office with the allocation of 4 million, which is carried through. And in terms of the other that have been approved this current financial year is costing 442 million. When we go to slide number 9, it's just showing the graph representing the previous information that I've presented. Slide number 10 is the allocation for NARISEC, where we've got 312 million, each province with the allocation of 34 million and 2 million at national office. In terms of the target, I think I'm not going to present this because I think from the APP presentation, the DG has talked to this slide. When we go to slide number 13, this one is rural enterprise and industrial development with a total allocation of 326, where you'll be able to see KZN with the highest allocation of 64 million. While we go to slide number 14, that's where you see that in terms of the FPSU allocation for them to be able to function, KZN have got 10 targets with 23 million, and agricultural enterprise that we have to support this current financial year, we've got 79 with the allocation of 31 at KZN, while in terms of total allocation for the previous commitment that we brought from last financial year, it was 8.9 million. Slide number 16, this is the allocation for restitution, which is making total of 2.9 billion for all provincial office, while KZN is still the highest and followed by Limpopo, depending on, and then Mpumalanga, depending on the number of claims that needs to be settled for KZN, which is 99, slide number 17, and then Eastern Cape 61, and then Limpopo 72. In terms of land claims that needs to be finalized, Eastern Cape we've got 80, and then 159 KZN and 60 Limpopo. That is making the allocation of the three provinces very high depending on the projects that needs to be implemented. Slide number 19, total allocation for land redistribution and development, we've got 305.5 million. In terms of the project, slide number 20, we've got 2,656, one household, 1 hectare project that needs to be implemented. Recap and development project commitment, we are having 7 million. These are the commitment that we moved with from last financial year. Slide 22, land tenure and administration, we've got total allocation of 298 million. In terms of a number of labor tenants applications settled, we've got 3,666, and then in terms of a number of hectares allocated to farm dwellers and labor tenants is 8,750 with a total allocation of 290 million. Commitment that we brought from last financial year is 6.7 million. So within the department, we've got allocation for our entity. We've got agriculture, slide number 25, agricultural land holding account, which is taking 1.4 billion, Ingonyama Trust, 21 million, OVG, 142 million. So slide 27 is showing the allocation for rates and taxes that needs to be paid by provincial office. Total allocation is 6.3 million for all provinces. Slide number 32, this is the detailed allocation for the ALA that I already talked to of 1.4 billion. So in terms of land acquisition, we've got 695 million allocated for us to acquire land. Land development support, where we have to develop our farmers, we've got 565 million allocation. And then at the end, we've got a total of 1.4 billion for the land ALA program. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm done with your presentation. So now let's move to. Yes, let's move to agriculture. And really, we don't have time. Please.
I'll take the 10 minutes, Chair. I'll just put emphasis, Chair, where it's needed. Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, I'll certainly not repeat what Minister has addressed. Specifically, I want to talk about the medium-term strategic framework, because really talking about the MTSF and the broader stakeholders, ensure that I focus on the quarters and the provinces. But I think, Chair, it is important that I highlight more strongly the fact that, one, our planning has been informed by an interaction with stakeholders, taking into account, of course, the MTSF priorities. In 2017, Chair, in the SONA of 2017, the former President, the Honorable President Zuma, highlighted one significant aspect of agriculture that was not there, which is the revitalization of agriculture in the agro-value processing process, which moves the black farmers in particular from primary production to agro-processing, where margins in terms of economic growth are, and that pursue this process. And then they brought up one significant point, is called CADAP, which is what we did with the SADC group, which agreed that 10% of the GDP of the country must be used to contribute and support agriculture. That was the agreement that we all agreed, that all the countries agreed that with SADC. It's called the Malabo Declaration. The priorities of the sector, Chair, include food and nutrition policy, ensure creation of jobs in the sector, increase the contribution of agriculture to gross domestic product. The contribution, Chair, in terms of the targets from 2014 to 2019 has been to support producers, 300,000 producers, create 500,000 jobs by 2019, 1 million jobs by 2030, reduce households vulnerable to hunger, increase the contribution of processed products to manufacturing annually, and percentage biomass, reduce vulnerability and risk associated with climate change, which has become a critical component that is affecting agriculture. The drought in the Western Cape recently affected our exports significantly, and hence contribution to GDP. But Jay, it's important not to only talk about targets, to also say how far are we now to those targets, just as a bigger picture of achievement or non-achievement. In terms of the MTSF targets, we had to do 300,000 jobs by 2019. We've done 1.4, just below 1.5 actually. And the impact of that has been to reduce rural unemployment rate. And we have seen a quite strong reduction in most pockets of rural South Africa. And StatsSA does back that one up. We have to do 1 million hectares of unutilized land. There is more land that is lying in communal areas that is sitting unutilized, and we were asked to actually utilize that land and put it under production. We did just below 1.2.9 million of those. That has allowed, let me just mention this here, ours is done by the provinces. So when I speak our annual targets and annual achievements, is actually what the provinces have done. Ours is to create a policy and regulatory framework, but working with the provinces in doing so. So when I talk about this figure, I'm talking about what the provinces have fundamentally done, working hand in hand with us. We had to do 80,000 smallholder producers. We needed to support them. We have supported about just below 260,000. We had to rehabilitate about 152,500 land had to be rehabilitated. We rehabilitated just just below 180,000. That improved our food security and improved our natural resources. 1.6 million households benefited from food security and nutrition initiatives. That was what the president asked us to do. We did about 19.4 million. That percentage has ensured a reduction in households vulnerable to hunger. And SPES-SA, there is evidence, because we use SPES-SA to actually bring the evidence to us. I'm not going to get into the vision and strategy. So I'll get to slide 8, and for a number of reasons, quickly, Chair. It talks to effective and efficient strategic leadership, governance, and administration. One of the things I found and still find is that the area of governance and policy compliance by our officials has been found lacking. That's why you hear concepts of corruption, concepts of maladministration. So this area began to be a need. It began to force us to spend attention on it. So we had to bring our officials to know that governance is significant in the execution of our policies, and more importantly, statutory requirements, especially SCM, is very important to comply with. And we kept on talking to that. Strengthening, of course, support, guidance, and interrelation with stakeholders. Minister spoke to this. Our officials are office bearers. They sit in offices. They don't know the producer. They don't interact with the person on the ground. And the stakeholders don't know who to talk to, how to access our services. And to this extent, we ensure that our officers go out. If they don't, they say they've done something. We then send evaluators and monitors to find out if indeed the service they claim they've given or supported has been given. Enable environment for food security and sector transformation. Of course, we all know that sector transformation is not happening. To date, we've brought in AgriBE. We know that those interventions are not allowing. There are associations more with mentorships. That is not bringing our colleagues to growth, and we are actually making sure that we monitor that. Enhanced production, I just keep this. Enhanced production, employment, and economic growth. The minister spoke about access to markets and the biosecurity. We have got now foot and mouth disease. Honorable Chair and honorable members, I'm losing billions of dollars a month because of foot and mouth. And the president has highlighted that our growth in agriculture is going to be export-led. And consequently, because of this foot and mouth, because of the weakness of our biosecurity, which we're strengthening now, we are not exporting to China when we're supposed to have opened that market. But foot and mouth came, and we could not. And then we have now put things together. I have asked my colleagues in my department to come up with a biosecurity proactive strategy to manage swine fever, avian flu, foot and mouth, the fall armyworm in the borders. We need to train our officials to manage these, and therefore we're doing that at this stage. And access to market has been a challenge to our smallholder farmers. And we cannot overemphasize this. And to this extent, one of the failures or challenges that we have had has been the effective implementation the preferential procurement policy, where smallholder farmers must have access to government markets. It is very fortunate today that the ministers of various departments have called us to say, give us women, youth, and disabled people in the correctional service space, for example, in the defense space, for example, to bring their food to us. And sustainable use of natural resources in the sector. I cannot talk more about land care. That every time we plant and plow, there is no care on the land, which is the bedrock of life, the bedrock of agriculture. To this extent, we have come up with what we call smart agriculture, which allows for efficient use of resources to manage the use of land when we plow. And the last one is ensure adaptation and mitigation to climate change through effective implementation of prescribed frameworks. This is what we call climate change adaptation strategies. We have come up with those working with our entity called ARC. Even today, they are giving us prediction as to what the weather conditions are going to be so that we are ready for the planting season. At this stage, I'll go to program two, which is page 14 and 15. I'm just making sure that, yeah. The quarterly target. Here, I will break down page 15. I will break down a little bit of what I was talking about in general around biosecurity to increase our economic growth in agriculture and show increased production and productivity in the prioritized areas. Here, we have come up with what we call improvement in animal schemes. Here we're talking about the scheme, they call it KYD, Kauna Faso Yard Home. We are getting in villages together with the ARC and improve the livestock so that they can go to auctions and sell their cattle. We have seen the results have been pretty much good in the local economy. The farmers have begun to get money as a result of improved livestock conditions, as a result of the interventions of the schemes. We are getting reports that the schemes are doing well. So in quarter one, the provinces are mobilizing farmers and collecting data, and that they'll do all the way up to quarter four. And in quarter four, we as the national department get reports. Similarly, with plant improvement schemes for prioritized value chains, we do that. We monitor the quality of propagating material for two plant seed schemes. It's very important that South Africa begin to produce its own cultivars of seeds. We depend on outside countries for seed production, and the ARC has come up with new cultivars of seeds and fruit crops so that our farmers can have a diversity and be able to compete by coming up with varieties of products. Effective management of biosecurity and related, I spoke to this in detail. So what we are doing there, a number of plant animal risk surveillance schemes, we are doing surveillances, especially in KZN, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, because of the proximity of those provinces to wildlife sanctuaries, i.e. Kruger National Park, and the other one is Ezenzelo. And the buffaloes, during drought time, cross over, break the boundaries, and cross over and come and mix with our cattle. That's how our cattle get this foot and mouth disease. So what we do then, we vaccinate. At this stage, we do vaccinations, and that vaccination is produced by ARC. But for us to be effective, we've got to do surveillances and understand where are these buffaloes. How are the border fences? Are we monitoring those borders? Is there somebody looking around? One of the things we've done effectively in Limpopo has been to work and establish farmer organizations. They've got the farmer authorities led by efficient farmer local farmers, and those people are actually giving us reports that our borders are broken, that there is drought, let's come and do boreholes. That leads to sustainability. It's no longer us going into the provinces and imposing what must happen, but we are working with the communities and they are informing us. So the area of biosecurity is actually an area that we have taken, we've taken it as a major risk in pest control. Next page would be effective management again of biosecurity. Here we deal with number of planned branch pest risk surveillances. That's what we're talking about here when we're talking about the fall armyworm. Now we're going into a season of planting our maize. The fall armyworm comes and destroys that maize. It is important for us to begin to put proactive measures, and most often than not, it comes from our neighbors. where their biosurgery, to due respect, is not as strong as we want, as we, as it's supposed to be. So we're busy with those surveillances at this stage. The most important, Chair, I must mention, is to encourage export protocols. The President has mentioned that not only that agriculture is good for growth and employment, but he said our growth is going to be export-led. So to this extent, we have signed about 27 export protocols. But the catch up of these export protocols, they need phytosanitary and sanitary measures. They put demands about how healthy should we, our animals be, how healthy should be our meat be. To this extent, we've come up with what we call meat inspectors and meat inspection services. These are our veterinary scientists looking at the quality of the health of our meat services as it comes from abattoirs. And therefore, we've come up with a veterinary strategy. We've implemented that. And one of the contagious diseases that has been hitting us is what we call contagious brucellosis. That disease is what, in other words, is called abortion in animals. Is animals, before they are pregnant, suddenly the baby or the calf comes out dead. And it's caused by a disease. And therefore, we had to vaccinate against this disease. That disease is called brucellosis. But fundamentally, it is a biosecurity of a farmer. But we have got to educate the farmer about that. To this extent, though, to make that effective, we have got compulsory community service veterinarians that must be deployed to communities. We are deploying now about 189 annually, and we have broken them per province. And our senior vets are monitoring the effectiveness of those veterinary services. And we now have asked them to bring the graduates that have just come out of university, unemployed graduates, to do that job. They are moving around to villages. Because we suddenly realize, Honorable Chair, that these vets, the only veterinary school is UP, University of Pretoria. And they are coming from that. And majority of them are white. Suddenly, when they were asking for cell phones, the toilets are not clean, this is, who is this? We suddenly asked this question. Then the profile was not right. We then began to say, UP, please accept students of other colors. And we're busy with that process at this stage. We ensure conservation, protection, rehabilitation, and recovery of depleted and degraded natural resources. Very significant. And here you hear in this slide 15, they call it number of targeted taxa conserved ex situ. You would wonder, what is this? And I said to the sisters, please stop this scientific thing when you talk to our people. You know what that means? It's indigenous seeds and plants conserved in the areas where they grow. So we need to make sure, for example, if in Limpopo you have got a type of seed, let's say Cape, for example, you have got these flowers, you have got rooibos, it grows here. We've got to protect that rooibos here. We've got to make sure that it is conserved where it grows so that it becomes what we call a competitive advantage in the export market or even domestic consumption market. Slide 16 is just the budget of the program teacher. I think let me run to program three, slide 20, which is food security. We just go directly on the quarterly share. I won't get on the medium term strategy. We as the department lead and coordinate government food security initiatives. We are getting from provinces. We've already done business plans with the provinces. We have agreed on what needs to be done. We then monitor and come up with reports. And we are focusing on national food and nutrition security interventions. We are not just saying produce maize. We are saying, is this nutritious? Can it change the condition of the life of the individual? We are not a poverty-stricken nation that all we do is just to produce maize for people to consume. Can this maize be mixed with vegetables? That's why we're talking about one hectare, one household. That's why we talk about family agriculture, and we fund it. So we then get reports annually that tells us how much of that has been done by the provinces. But before we use to let the provinces do this, and then we get reports from AG that says actually what they said they did not happen. We now came up with about, the minister spoke about it, what we call monitors and evaluators, 9 under unemployed graduates are going to go to all the provinces, monitor each project when it's about to be implemented, where it is implemented, who is implementing it, what effect does it have, and report on that. Not the province, that individual. Then they coordinate that report. So we know what comes out of this strategy has actually met the impact for which it was intended. If it doesn't, let's review the strategy. But we are not going to be hearing that the strategy did this. But in effect, it did not. We therefore, to this extent, and have to enhance the capacity for efficient delivery of the sector. I must accept, Chair, one of the fundamental weaknesses we have encountered is the lack of capacity of our officials. We talk about all the nice things, but the person who is going to do this job does not have this capacity and struggles. And our job is to come up with interventions of over-the-shoulder training. And to that extent, we have found some success, especially on those officials who we are monitoring on a quarterly basis. Enhanced capacity, again, for efficient delivery of services. We place graduates in agriculture for capacity development and monitor. We have status reports on those graduates in terms of how efficient they have been performing. We have, for example, Chair, a target of 1,000 graduates to be placed in provinces. We are fighting the unemployment scourge. And the unemployment scourge of educated young people is a sad thing that is not on the government shoulders. It's on us as officials to make sure that it does happen. Today, this extent, we have called all undergraduates and postgraduates who are unemployed to apply. And for this year, we're putting 1,000. And we're using our agricultural colleges as bases of feeders to assist us in these programs. Because we don't want to just put these graduates there and they are not efficient. And then we sacrifice the quality of service to our communities. National Policy on Extension and Advisory Service. We have got that policy. We have put it into place. We have placed about 20 extension services a year. And we are going to change that. We have got constraints. That figure is low, we admit. But we are going to be putting extension officials in each of the projects we're going to so that they can give knowledge at local level. Same thing what we have done, Chair, in terms of support, and that is going to go to Cabinet. We have developed a national policy on comprehensive producer development support. That policy is in its 6th edition. It comprises mechanization, blended finance, commercialization of black farmers. It brings all forms of support into one. We call it comprehensive producer development support program. That policy, as we talk, is ready to be presented to this committee and then to Cabinet. It is a policy that talks about how it regulates and coordinates support. Instead of having this disintegrated support, one is doing that, the other one is doing this. At the end, we have got duplication of resources. Chair, I spoke about 2017 when our president spoke in the SONA, spoke about 450 black farmers to be commercialized. We are advanced in this. We have the province have already given us 50, and I think for this year we put about 100 that needs to be commercialized. They moved from the stage of primary production. I was impressed, Chair and honorable members, to note that in Limpopo, there is a tree called Moringa. And there were ladies who were actually going to Switzerland in Geneva. They were actually
standing among all international producers and demonstrating the effectiveness. One of those people in Switzerland took over because we could not support that lady to dry the moringa for 3 million and therefore partnered with this. We said we can't afford that. And therefore we are at the edge. We are now bringing those people. Similarly, in Mpumalanga, a lady has got macadamia and is producing macadamia, but he cannot crack those, he cannot put them into the oven, he cannot turn them into other processes. We had to come in and assist there. This is what this commercialization is about. In most areas in the beef sector, for example, we are developing winners. They are doing their winners and taking them through feedlotting. From feedlotting, they go to auctions, and from auctions, they go to abattoirs. And our black farmers are involved in that. And we are pretty much going to report on that, Chair, as we progress. And I would be pleased if you can continue asking us questions as to far we are on this. Because it is significant in taking our black farmers from the primary production, which has no margins at all. It's just a waste, really. It's just producing food, putting too much money, getting less in return. And therefore, we are on this program pretty much hard. Slide 23, Chair. I began to be a little bit specific here, where I've given the numbers per province in terms of households supported with agricultural food production initiatives. All the numbers are there, Chair. This year we're going to be doing about 86,256. We've broken it down per province. Number of hectares. How much time do I have? Number of hectares planted for food production is very important, 109,000, just above 110,000. Number of extension support practitioners that we need to deploy to organizations. This is the face of agriculture. This is the face of agriculture to farmers, extension service supporters. We have seen how in Kenya they have farmers that produce professors, have produced a lot of brilliant people because these extension services have been supporting farmers. We are deploying those. I'm not happy with the number. I've told the minister, but he said we are going to increase the budget to get more. The producers that we are going to be supporting this year is 26,200 in DAF, and we've broken them per province share. This is quarterly staff, also chair, without boring you. This again, these are food production initiatives per province, per quarter, and hectares per quarter. And similarly, the extension practitioners will be deployed, the number of producers also. The next one, Chair, is slide 23-24. Promotion here. 30 to 34. Here we're doing market access, Chair. Ensure support for market access and processing of agricultural goods. I did just Chair, perhaps I took it for granted that Minister did mention that forestry and fisheries are still reported, but they actually are moving in the, they are in the transition now. We've already begun to move them to DEA, environmental services, but we report on them. But DEA is actually working on them. So you always hear talk about agriculture, forest and fisheries, and I'll just pretty much run over when I come to them. We create an enabling environment for smallholders to have access to markets. The most important there is to have certification, and it's called SAGAP. And per quarter, we're going to produce these, and they are done by SAPS, and PPECB. Agro-processing entrepreneurs that we need to train is about 60 this year. Number of commodity-based cooperatives that have been established is about 12. Number of cooperatives supported already in training is 144. Slide F. 51, to ensure support for market access again and processing in agriculture. This area of agri-BE enforcement guidelines, we have produced those guidelines, shared those agri-BE guidelines with the sector. I must confess, Chair, that this area needs greater monitoring, because that's where transformation in agriculture needs to take place. And I'm putting my fingers on it, Chair. Sector codes have been promulgated and implemented. We'll report on them as we progress. Ensure support, slide 32, ensure support for market access once again, market opportunity profile research developed just to know where we're going to be doing what markets are available, where trade agreements were signed, our participation in trade negotiations, in the international relations strategy that we have implemented. All these are allowing us to export. In particular, now we have come up with the Africa Free Trade Continental Agreement, trade agreement. That trade agreement is going to ensure that we actually export to Africa. I must report that 39% of our exports generally are actually to Africa. The AU is similar thing, Chair. This is the budget on page 35. The rest is just forestry and fisheries, Chair. And I don't think it would be of great interest to you here, because going forward is not going to be your area, just to, if you allow me, Chair. I think it's not going to be more of your area, that one. I would like just to, okay. I can just that quickly write to program one. I don't know how much time. Just on page 62. I'm worried about time now. Here, Chair, is just what we do, and this is significant. It's, we do full implementation of risk management. It's very critical. Annual risk management-based internal audit plan. Our before we are audited externally, we've got an audit committee internally that looks at all the programs, how far we're moving, how are we doing, are we doing fruitless expenditure, are we doing wasteful expenditure, why are we doing it, who is doing it where. Testing of DAF's core directorate business continuity plans in case of disaster. What will DAF do? We have got that plan together. Replication of hardware and services to DR site. What is DR site? The disaster recovery sites. We have implemented that. One prioritized ICT plan we have implemented. One of the key important, Chair, just in conclusion, has been the passing of we're busy with a bill called the Agricultural, the Preservation and Development Protection of Agricultural Land Bill. We have got one Act of 1970, Act 70. That is the only Act that agriculture has. As a result, you have seen the proliferation and abuse, proliferation of development in agricultural land. For example, we have seen centers in Stellenbosch, right here, Chair. People are turning productive farms into flats, into residential sites, because of the fear of expropriation. Without. So because this act is not there, they easily are applying to take that land. Very productive wine farms are being changed, and we're refusing. So this bill, Chair, is so important that it be passed, and we have already taken it up to NEDLAC, and we're going to be presenting now to our minister, from our minister to all the committees, and then to cabinet for it to pass. Just to finish, we have got an unqualified audit 2018-2019 financial year. And I would conclude, Chair, by saying perhaps if you need the financials, I'll just throw it to my CEO, CFO, to quickly run through. Hopefully, I'm still within time, Chair.
The finances?
Yes, Chair.
We'll produce the document on our own.
Okay.
It's fine because we don't have time.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for the presentation. Now
thank
I'm
you.
Going to give to members to ask questions. I'll start with Mama Ngwenya, because she's leaving, and then you'll come, and then Mama Ngwenya. Yeah. Mama Ngwenya, if you are ready, you can start.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank the presentation, but now I'm working under pressure. Have you seen how large this document is this? And the preparation that we have made, I don't think it will make justice for me. I've got a chairperson's meeting at 12 o'clock. And I like when I'm asking the question and sit and listen what are they going to say. So I'll leave other members to ask the question. I don't think that I'll make justice to ask the question and leave. Thank you.
You can email that question and then we'll give to the departmental response in writing. Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, before I start with questions, please, if we put timelines out for presentation, can we just keep with that timelines? You gave the two departments 30 minutes each, Chairperson, and it's your responsibility to manage that time. We've got basically just over an hour to ask questions and get feedback from the department, and it is really unfair. You are failing us as a committee by allowing limitation, and it's happening each and every committee. Please. Chairperson, my first question would be, the president stated, you know, that government-owned land will be distributed. And I've heard nothing in the Department of Rural Development Land Reform on the exact plan, the budget, timelines, all of that, on government-owned land that will be distributed to people who don't have land. The second question, Che, would be in terms of tribal areas, market access to those farmers. How do the department plan to ensure that there is market access for, because you can produce as much as you like, but if you don't have a market, it's a useless exercise. Because you produce to sell it, to make a living from it at the end of the day. Now, aligned to that, I would also ask, how do we make sure that we, you know, for example, because I've seen that especially in tribal areas, the majority of things that are farmed is maize, because everybody knows maize, and that's it. You know, we've seen even tea plantations turning into maize farms. You know, everything is turned into maize. Now, it's an important product as South Africans, because we all eat pap, you know, and millies and stump millies and all of that. My question is, how, if we talk about really supporting those farmers, because to try and convert them into farming something new is obviously going to take a process. It's going to take some training. It's going to take, you know, all of that. And it's an unfamiliar ground, especially, and it's very widespread and it's small scale, obviously. So it becomes a bit of a problem around viability, but that need to be prospected in any way on how to diversify that specific area, because some of these tribal lands are highly productive agricultural land that is totally underutilized. But the core that I want to come to is, when, you know, those farmers that farm with maize, how do the department assist by making sure that there's mills that they can transform those maize into maize meal, that they can sell the maize meal, so it's value added, and then they're starting to get value for their production? I mean, that is a simple way of empowering those communities, and I don't see that. I really don't see that. transport systems in line with agri-hubs. I mean, we, you know, I've seen some of these agri-hubs. I mean, when we were in the Free State, they spoke about agri-parks. And at the end of the day, the department acknowledged that there isn't, agri-parks do not exist. There is no such thing as the agri-park. It's agri-hubs. So it's you know, I don't know what that whole thing is, because it's putting wool over our eyes. But I want to know, in terms of these agri-parks, how does the department integrate transport systems that give access to market? Because if it needs to go to market. And then that small farmer that we really want to try and help through all these programs that we're doing, I mean, they don't even have trucks and vehicles to transport their stuff to there. So, you know, yeah. If you can put some, you know, light on that. Also in tribal areas, I'm traveling a lot I'm coming from Limpopo, so I travel a lot amongst villages, you know, and all of that. And there's places with the most beautiful fruits, you know, fruit trees, guavas this size, hanging on trees, getting rotten, mangoes, this size mangoes, and it's not seeing a market at all. It hangs there. The few that household can eat, they eat, and the rest fall off and rot. That's a potential to turn that in, but those communities do not have a means or a system to direct it towards the market. Obviously, it's not commercial. It's very small. You know, it's maybe a few trees. Yes, it's subsistence. But, I mean, if you combine that whole village's fruits, you know, it becomes viable. How do the department assist to make sure that turns into economic potential and, you know, put money in the hands of those specific communities? Then, I want to know again on rural development land reform. What is the plan going forward to instate tribal land to private ownership? Tribal land, in terms of, and I'm speaking more especially of residential lands. What's the plan going forward? Because that, let's just acknowledge it today. All that land is in state hands. It's not privately owned. And we are trying to reinstate ownership in previously disadvantaged communities whose land were taken away. So I want to know, how do the department plan to address this? And if you say you cannot do this, then I want to know, why can't you reinstate ownership in tribal land? Because we talk about spatial planning, dividing, you know, in terms of who stays where. That is a divisive system that allows only a certain tribe to stay in a certain area. Nobody can own the land. Nobody has economic access. Because that is money in their hands. And there's an abuse of, I want to put it straight, tsotsis, that steal money somewhere else. They go and build mansions on tribal land, okay, and they know it cannot be taken away from them because they are not the owners of that. They build mansions, and I can go and show you, mansions, 10, 20 million rand mansions on tribal land. Where that money come from? So we will, once we starting to collect back money that was stolen from government, we won't be able to take it because it's there. It's laying there. and it's tax evasion and. So it's important that we address this issue. But it's also important for the fact that those communities need economic access. We need to put money in the hands of those communities because they are struggling. And they sit on a gold mine, but they cannot utilize it because they don't own it. It will open up job opportunities. I mean, if we talk about the estate market and whatever, we will expand our economy. I cannot see why we as government are not taking this serious. And it is stipulated in terms of Section 25, subsection 5 and 6, that it must be reinstated. I want to know on page... Sorry, I know it's this presentation. Page 20. On the number of households supported under one household, 1 hectare. What is this money used for? For what is this money used for? Because we say there's a target, there's an amount, so many million rand. At the end of the day, we spent 241 million rand. On this, but I want to know on what is this money used for? And then in the same breath, I want to ask, why is there differences in variations on provinces? And I want to give you a few examples, because I've worked out the average here. The average is 90,000, almost 90,900. But some provinces, for example, Free State, has got 39,583 rand per household. Gauteng has got 742,933 rand per household. Even worse, Northwest, 840,425 rand per household. So how do you get to these figures? And what is this money used for? Because there's something wrong in front of me. And then in Eastern Cape, we put a target of 584, but there's zero budget. So please explain that to me. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chair, thank you. I need to leave urgently as well for other business, so I will send in an email with my questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will ask a few questions when I, depending on time, I think there's some others that we need to do in writing. First, I want to start off with the cost, the supporting programs. I would like to know at this stage, what I get out of the documents is there's still a very big focus, and my question is more in general, a big focus on the number of people assisted instead of on viable projects. That brings me to, in the previous term, we had a lot of discussions on the focus on smallholders and sustainable farmers, and that also on the whole issue of to be able to market and get them market access. What is the department's plan? And I actually would request the department to come back in the year following up to give us this explicit plans and how it's been done and the money spent to that in each of the provinces. According to the DORA bill, I want to start with the very elementary things and need to know, and I would like to know if this is in place. The Dora Bill specifies a lot of things that should be done by the national department and should be done by the provincial departments, because this is part of conditional grants, COSP, is that the farmer should be listed in a provincial and a national farm registers. Does the national department have access of all the 9 provinces' registers, and are they up to date? And if not, why not? And does the department have the signed business plans for CUSP submitted by the provinces as described and outlined in the DORA? And if not, why not? And give us the reasons why this is not, if it's not being done properly, why it's not being done properly. Then on agri-parks, I would like to know, there's a lot of things around, has been said around agri-parks, but the DORA Bill also gives clear guidelines on what departments and recipients and that kind of thing. At this stage, in one of the documents, they refer to the pooling of irrigation, all irrigation systems across various departments, and they're referring to a 10% of that money to the presidential war room. I would like to know if that is still existing, and if it's existing, where does the legality of such a decision lies within the DORA Bill? Because some of the departments, like the old Water and Sanitation and Environment Department, it's not specified in the DORA Bill as one of the departments that should administer funds like that. Mm-hmm. Then I would also like to know if all the, these, and you will see I really focus on the conditional grants and the administration of that between the national and the province. The ILIMA, LETSEMA, the cost interaction, the cost extension recovery, the agri-college upgrades, the disaster relief, and the land care grants, all of those, are they ring-fenced, and are they specifically used for what they're supposed to be used, and what percentage of those grants are spent on administration and things that is not supposed to be spent. Then I want to come to something that you said, that the effective and efficient strategic leadership is something that needs to be looked at, and there's not enough funding and so on. But I would really like maybe that won't give you enough time to do that now, but also a presentation to the to the select committee. Look at that, the plan, how and what, and maybe combine it with how you're going to, in that, make sure that conditional grants and money be spent correct according to the money bills and the DORA bills and that outline, because to me, but in the confusion of all these things and things have been changed, a lot of possibilities is there that some of these funds are undermanaged or mismanaged or whatever. So I would like to know that. Then I would like to refer to, ask a question that's not been mentioned here, but yeah. I would like to know, what is the, can the department come and give us as a select committee a full presentation on the recovery plans for the two sectors, because that's one of the APPs, on abalone and West Coast rock lobster, as well as how are they going to ensure that the fish stock are not going to be depleted, because one of the APPs is ensured conservation, protection, and rehabilitation and recovery of the depleted stocks. And that includes the whole thing about the illegal on abalone and fishing, and the whole implementation of legislation, because you know everyone in this room I'm sure, knows that in Pearly Beach, in Hans Bay, it's la-la land for poachers. It's la-la land. People can't walk on the beach in certain times of the day. They are told, go to your car and move because we are busy. People can see with their binoculars and with their eyes how 45 boats are in there with the divers. Nobody is doing anything about it. If they report it to the police station, nothing happens. This is going on, this is in the media. There has been nobody does anything about it. I can't see how we can allow it. I want the department to come and tell us why and how, and a plan on how to stop it. Then I would like to go to... Maybe I didn't understand correctly, but there was a mention of 42,750 hectares divided by 89 smallholders. That gives me 480 hectares per smallholder, which is actually not smallholders then anymore. I need some clarity on how does the department get to that, because there are certain rules, regulations, and legislation directing grazing and conservation and all those things. So yeah, just some clarity on that. Then I want to go to the presentation on geospatial and cadastral services. I just want to know the land use master plan. It's part of the APPs. I'm not clear. Is the land use master plan already developed, or is that the APP that's here that says, because in 2019-20 it's a draft land use master plan, land use master plan approved by cabinet, and then so I take it that it's not been done yet. I would like to know if the department will give the select committee a clearer idea of how is the department going about this land use master plan. What are the criteria? What are the policies? What are the basic things that is going to be used? And is there input from experts or whatever is needed to develop this land use master plan? And if you cannot do that today, I understand, but just a clarity on that, and I would also, Chairperson, then request the department to do us a presentation as part of the program to the select committee. And then I would go to the last question. Just one of the current performance indicator is a percentage of deeds made available within 7 days from lodgement for execution. I would really ask, is this a realistic APP? Because I would like to know what is the current time frame, because I can tell you I've got an experience of waiting for much, much longer than 7 days. And what is the legislative framework and policies, and is the department planning to change this, amend the legislation and the policy frameworks, or what? How are we going to do this? Because it's no use to put in an APP, that's very impressive, and think, okay, we're going to do it, but instead, I see you scratching your head. I'm also scratching my head, sir, because this doesn't make sense to me. I would like, through the chairperson, to also ask the department to give us a full presentation on how this is going to be done. I understand that maybe you'll start in one province, as has been mentioned, and other things and so on. But there are backlogs, there are capacity, there are funding, there are all these. So to put an APP, just to put an APP, it's not working for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just In terms of what was presented now to us, I think we will have another opportunities now to engage the department on the annual performance plan as we go ahead. But I think for the committee also to note the concern that I have in terms of the reconfiguration of the department. I think when you hear about reorganization, then it means staff members. We don't want an impact on staff, which will also now create maybe impact on the service delivery of the department. So we just want to note that we don't want the department and the staff to be impacted at all. Then the other thing that I want to raise is you have mentioned now at the end, and I think coming from the Western Cape and also from Somerset West Side, if you drive through, you can see how agricultural land has been developed now into those units that you refer to. And I think that is a concern in terms of agricultural land now being sold and then multi-story buildings going up on those pieces of land. And I think that must be stopped. Because that is now prime land that is supposed to be given to the people who are those people that wants to do farming and everything like that. So I just want to highlight that. The other thing that I want to raise here in terms of the 7 billion rand that is going to provinces, I think on that one, and I think the committee also needs to keep an eye in terms of our oversight, in terms of the funds that is going to, that 7 billion that is going to the provinces, to make sure that the department has a better plan in place now to monitor also in terms of the business plans from provinces, so that we make sure that the funds is spent on those outcomes or business plans that were submitted by provinces. I think that is an issue that we need to keep our eye on. Then the last thing that I want to raise, your target there in terms of the number of state land parcels surveyed, your target for 2019-2020 is about 1,500, and then you move over to the next 2020-21 to 2,400. And I think that is not for me a target. If you can maybe double that, but I know, yeah, you have come with a already plan here to us, and you say 2,500 for the next financial year. But I think that's not a fair target in terms of what you can do more for that program two, in terms of your performance indicator for that program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and we welcome the presentation by the department, and also to appreciate that they were presenting two budget votes. We really want to welcome that. The first question that I had, I think part of it has been asked by the other members, was in relation to the percentage of deeds, which was 7 days, 95% target. But I'm asking it from a different angle, to say what was the historical average of that percentage, so that a historical background will inform the target that you put there. What was the historical percentage in previous years? The other one is in relation to the state land survey. As you indicated, you have selected Limpopo as the pilot. For the purpose of monitoring, I come from Limpopo. I will need to know where that what are the areas that will be covered, so that whenever we do our constituency work, we are able to check where it is happening. In the rural development infrastructure projects, I saw the presentation, but I could not get. Do you have stalled projects? I remember we in Limpopo, where I come from, in Vuani, we have got the Masia project, which is stalled. What are your plans in relation to a project like that one, which is stalled in terms of moving forward? All other projects, for example, you had your Mieshe project. What is the progress? What are the lessons that we learned out of that rural project? How can we replicate it in other parts of the province so that it can be able to assist moving forward? The other one on finance is in relation to the equipment. I saw the equipment, they are the ones that received the lowest of the budget. And from where I'm standing, they are the ones that are needed by small-scale farmers to be able to assist them to produce on a large scale. How are we going to mitigate for that impact, more especially on small-scale farmers? Because small-scale farmers are usually black farmers that are starting. How are you going to mitigate for that? The last question is on biosecurity, Chairperson. We find that whenever there is an alert on, for example, foot and mouth disease, where I come from is closer to areas around Kruger National Park, where you'll find that you do have a program that seeks to address that. You put a red line, yellow line. How do we strengthen those so that we are not reactive? Because the way I see it, we react when we see that there is a threat of foot and mouth diseases. How do we strengthen it so that we become proactive in dealing with it rather than react when we see that there is a threat? We put plans, because all the plans that you put when you react after the threat of foot and mouth disease, you find that they are effective, but they are short term. We relax after those effective plans have been put in place, and then in the long run you go back to the same problem again. How do we ensure as the department to have a streamlined project that deals with security in areas like your red line and yellow line? Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks.
Bibi? Okay, thank you very much, Chair, and you would like to welcome the remarks by the Minister, of which they were very thoughtful because they were all detailed with the two votes. And also with the department, thank you for emailing us the presentation. You had them on time. We did go through to them. And also what is more appreciated is mentioning the provinces, which is, you know, that was deployed by our provinces, and then it's easy for us to do the oversight when we go out there to assist the department regarding whatever is detailed. It is Kone Obuse in Greenville anyway. And also I've got quite a number of questions, but I think allow me to share with others. I'm going to email the department. And for him to go through to them. And I'm just going to ask, I think just about a few of them. And the first one will be, are the rural infrastructure development projects adequately supported by the DRD LR staff? And the following one will be, can the department please clarify what difference is between rural infrastructure and development and rural enterprise and industrial development? There's a clarity on that. And also coming to AgriParks, I remember the last updates on the department of the website related on AgriParks were updates of business plans loaded later in 2017. Can the department please provide a breakdown of current activities and projected timelines to completion to the development of these initiatives? I just need the clarity on that also. And also, many of the AgriParks business plans submitted were developed by the contracted consultants. And it was also not the same consultant of each province, in each province. And the first question would be, why can the province not use its own capacity to develop these plans? The second one will be, what cohesion is there between regional plans if they are produced by the different consultants? Clarity on that. I think the remainder of the questions I'm going to email you for response. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Honourable Members, for the questions. DG, just tell me, this issue of the land claims, you said, especially in the Northwest, there are 33 claim, and 16 were already settled. Did those claim, receive a title deed for that land? That's my first question. And then the second one, your NARISEC. You said you have recruited 1,250, but only 202 were absorbed in work. Can you give us a breakdown so that we can know which province has two or three, or and what they are doing when you say they absorbed it into work? And then 2 years ago, DG, your department was struggling at a 46% of a vacancy rate in section for claim and claim research and finalization. Can you tell us, for that matter, is it has been addressed now? Because if you are struggling at 46%, really it means there are no people that can do the actual work that they're supposed to do. And then the other question is, Honourable Member here mentioned the issue of the project at Mishe in Limpopo. Mishe? Moeshe. Yes, Moeshe. I remember 2 years ago, in 2016-17, the former minister, Honourable Gwindi, he did mention, and he went to Ratlo local municipality where I come from and promised us that he will replicate those projects to Ratlo local municipality. But till today, there's nothing happening there. councillors and staff members from Laratlo local municipality, led by the mayor by that time, they went there to see, and they were so impressed to see those projects in Moshe, whatever that name, Moshe, Mweshe, in Limpopo. Can you clarify us, how far are you, did you budgeted for that project in Ratlo? And then my last question, when I grew up, there is this horror in Northwest. We used to get food and everything there, horror. What is happening now? Because it seems nothing is happening now at Kora. And tell me, who's the owner of that land? You must start from the border gate of Ramat Lavama to Kora and go there. Check and tell us, who's the owner of that land? Is it government or is it somebody's land? And if you don't get any information, you must go back, because we grew up there, we know it. There was a gentleman by the name of J.J. Fleming, who's the owner of the land. And if not, he will clarify us. And then the last question is, how far are you with this agri-parks? Because in the Northwest, we have the 4 districts. The last time I heard about, it was 2 years ago, about the agri-parks in the Northwest. What are they benefiting our communities? How much did you budget it for that agri-park? Are they working or they are just white elephants? So those are the questions that I want to ask you, DG, and your team. Thanks. You can answer.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think we have got two votes, is rural development and agriculture. I will deal with those issues that fundamentally deal with agriculture. And my colleague here will handle the issues that deal with land and agri-parks, among others. I think that let me start with the contentious and I think relevant issue of market access for communal farmers. And it is a question that perhaps is located in the context of what we have done in segmenting these farmers. In our trying to understand them and their needs and what they do, we had to segment them. We have got what we call vulnerable. We have got then subsistence. Then we have got smallholder commercial. Then we have got big commercials. And all of them are actually separated, or the criteria is turnover. The ones that are vulnerable and subsistence, their fundamental production system is food security. But at one point, you are correct, and it's all over, they produce one commodity, one point. And I guess you know, as I do, in economies where there is much supply at one point, prices or demand decreases. And that is what is happening in all the communities. Whether we can create the markets for them, which is where I'm going, I'm going to answer that question, but the point is they do grains. And where you come from in Limpopo, there's one season for mango. And all of them get mango. There's one season for oranges. There's one season for other commodities. So what has happened in that case, for example, you found them taking their mangoes to factory places to get achar, which is locally consumed, and that they do sell to various groups among themselves, and some of it they sell to Gauteng, where you say there's a distance there, but they do sell most of their achars to Gauteng as groups sometimes. Using, I know one instance where they would use in oranges, they would use a gentleman called Pete Minar, who would be traveling, his truck traveling to Durban, or they would be using
That too, as far as tomatoes are concerned. And what has also occurred, and you may disagree or agree with me on this, but I have observed as I interact with these farmers, ZZ2 is a fender around which most of the tomato farmers, small growers, are mentored. And he does take them in Limpopo, together with his own commodity tomatoes, to one market. And we've seen that happen. And he has presented that. What I have seen happening in the Eastern Cape has been an example in which one, in Bizana area, we bought a milling machine. They produce maize meal. That maize meal ended up producing a maize meal with a name for that local community with a market. Similarly, in Aidutua, there is a community there that is doing the same, where we provided a machine with the province that mills their product. We then found out, to the point you made earlier, that actually the mass, what we thought was mass production, actually was not as mass as we thought. The machines ended up being empty after the season. And in some instances, because we asked for contributions from them to create what I call self-reliance, but they still have to pay some money, because I believe there's no free money. So we do balance it. Down in Bizana and Lusigisig and Flagstaff, they've come together. They are producing maize for Vietnam. They are exporting to Vietnam. Has this happened at a large extent, at a large scale? I'll agree with you, no. It has not happened at large scale. But because of the segmentation and the existence of poverty, it is our belief that let us meet their food security needs first. Where you say you'll see an instance of a guava and a mango that rots, where it could be, in my view, and what I've seen, and what we also have seen with the farmer association, those are individual instances. For example, there's a household where there are many of the lemons, but they are not of good quality. And therefore, they are sitting in that tree, nobody wants to buy them. Maybe the question is, why are we not assisting that lady to produce quality mango? We're doing that. So there are two things that are important. One is quality of production. The quality that the consumer does not say, because you are a poor smallholder farmer, we will take even if this maize is not washed. Maize must be washed. It must have a dry percentage, so that when you mill it, it actually mills properly. They won't accept it because it's coming from a smallholder farmer. So there are requirements of phytosanitary and sanitary that the customer wants, and these are the things we actually train them in. Have we done that sufficiently? No, we have not. And now what we have done, together with the rural development, now that we are working together, we're developing what they call farmer production support unit, which is a total, complete one point service area, in which you have got all the components of service support. You have got an agronomist for soil test. You have got a vet for animal health. You have got access to medicine from on the spot, for example. We have got ARC coming up with some other knowledge. We have got extension service there. We are bringing all these components together with a manager to ensure that, and then the threat mechanization comes in to support that group of farmers. Rural development has developed this, and we're working on it, and the minister has tasked us to work on that. And it is a component of AgriParks that is going to make these FPSUs work more to address that question of access to markets by creating domestic consumption. Because I don't believe that markets can be looked at as markets from Gauteng. These people are getting pensions. These people are getting immigrant incomes. But they need to use them appropriately. Believe me or not, sir, they also want quality products. They want quality products. They won't buy maize that is not clean. So consequently, these phytosanitary and sanitary requirements are at the center of what these farmers do want. And I think you might have heard about something called the Agrarian Revolution. The Agrarian Revolution is now under the leadership of COCT, traditional authorities, and is led by Her Excellency Honorable Dr. Nkosazana Zuma. That particular department is beginning to define more than production discipline within the communal areas, which indeed has not been there in the past. And that is going to talk to a variety of things, one of them being market access. But the most important, though, and I think I need to emphasize this point, is production discipline. There is no farmer that produces access that is not having a quality in it, that is not having dedication of personnel with skill in it. So I think these are the kind of things we're doing, and correctly you are calling it agri-hubs. We call it service centers. And they usually, in these areas, happen within the area of a chief, for example, where the chief would call all his chieftains and all that, and where people gather. All these things now, rudimentary, are still to emerge organically, because I believe in participatory development. That let us not impose development on these people. Let it organically come out of them. Ours is to create an enabling environment for this to occur. CASP, I'm not sure if I answered that sufficiently, but I can talk to the issue of diversification. Do they produce diversified community commodities? Say, as I said, they are all seasonal. You go to Limpopo, they cannot produce maize at a time when there's mangoes, there's oranges. Similarly, it's rain season now in October, November. They are not going to be producing more animals. They'll be producing grains. They are producing soils. So in a way, therefore, it is informed by seasons. There's a question that came around DORA, and I found it quite interesting because it's an area around the Division of Revenue Act that we all have been called to observe. And those funds fundamentally are all ring-fenced, madam. They are ring-fenced. Any use out of those funds, for example, CASP, is infrastructure-based. CASP cannot therefore be used for animal diseases. If there is excess money in CASP, and it is for provinces, the only percentage that we use for monitoring, which were given by National Treasury, is 5% of CASP for the monitoring of the use of that fund, which was done as a deviation to allow us as nationals to effectively monitor the efficient utilizations of those funds by the provinces. Are they doing business plans? Yes, they do. The CASP as a fund is a locomotive to carry the business plans into efficient utilization. That's what it is. Similarly with ILIMA. And we can talk the same thing about land care. The only problem is the appropriate time by when those funds come. For example, land care. Land care came late in December, and we're expected to finish that by end of March, and we had only 2 months. By the time we wanted to ask for a deviation not to advertise, they said no. The end result, it was a rollover. But the fund could not be used for anything. Therefore, there were business plans. ILIMA was there. Recovery plan on abalone and fish stocks. And the security that's happening in Hamsby, well, there is a plan for abalone. Abalone is being pushed left and right. There is extensive abuse of marine resources in the Western Cape. Extensive. And therefore, we've employed what we call the MK veterans, MKVAs. I have employed those people, those who used to be part of the ANC out there were unemployed. We have made a conscious decision to employ them because they've got security to just train them. They are deployed in Camps Bay. They are deployed in Hams Bay. Are they effectively doing the job? We are doing our attempts that we made them to get through that, honorable member. We're doing our monitoring, but I will bring a stronger strategy
to just explain how the recovery plan is happening. And then you spoke about a question about 400 hectares. Are these smallholders? And yes, they are. But in terms of our segmentation, the smallholder commercial produces for excess. He produces for excess. In other words, his production is no longer domestic consumption. In other words, for self-consumption. He competes, he produces to compete with others for the market. So he cannot produce at 50 hectares. He cannot produce at 100 hectares. And we therefore encourage that producer to use what I call, again, production discipline. That means efficient implement. Government supports them. That's where you hear the issue of blended finance. Blended finance is coming as a solution to the issue of how we can fund and consistently fund the smallholder farmers to commercialize them. We fund them this year, we fund them next year, we fund them next year, we fund them that year, until they have emerged and become self-sufficient. We have stopped this thing of throwing money in 1 year and said you have funded the farmer. In the same way that the former government used to do, they grew up Constantia, this thing that produces wine, that company that produces wine. The state took about 10 years funding that commodity. And today is a wine farmer that is known in the world. And therefore, we are taking the same deliberate approach of consistent support to smallholder farmers until they have got market access. And let me just quickly go to share with your permission to this issue of market access, because I think there's an understanding that there's too much product, why don't they use them? Markets, especially markets, export markets, even domestic markets, Pick and Pay, you won't go to Pick and Pay if you don't have SA Gap. They want to know that you are trained and that your product is of quality. Whether it's I know one lady in Gauteng who produces for Pick and Pay now, Pigar. He had to plan, he had to work with the Danes. The Denmark guys came, they are known in pig production. They came and supported her, and we put money, she's the biggest supporting housing in pork, for example, through Pick and Pay. But there must have been a certification called SA Gap. But for her to go outside, we need global gap. And that is a tough training, because what matches the commodities are everywhere. If they are not of good quality and not having a production discipline, we will continue having problems of this major supply. And the other question that was raised, I'm not sure if that was sufficient, you'll excuse me if it is not. And let me go to the issue of NMOC, for example, the National Macro Organization of Government. That the president stated it clearly that this will not affect it at all employees. It will not result in retrenchment. The president stated that categorically. So NMOC is about reorganizing the state structures for efficiency of delivery of the strategies which government spoke, the president, honorable president spoke through in the State of the Nation. Better monitoring of funds of CASP, I've spoken to that. We have brought about nine graduates which were training to follow, we call it follow the money. The projects are here and they know them, and the province says I'm going to be deploying ABC, they follow them. One of the audit findings we got was that IDs were not accurate. We found out that there was just a mistake that was not supposed to occur because of the pressure. But that was picked by our monitors. Our monitors picked that up before it was picked by anyone. Our auditors, internal auditors, picked that one up. So that before AG picks anything or any other body, so we've got these monitors. And that is one thing I can mention as having been lacking in government, the monitoring and evaluation of the impact of the project on the intended beneficiaries. And I think we're busy doing pretty much well there. Are we succeeding? I think with your assistance through these questions, we shall. How biosecurity, how are we ensuring sustainability?
And I think the question, that's the first question you ask, why are we reacting? Why are we reacting every time there's a disease? I think we've learned in this particular one, we've said the farmer associations in that area must be part of the solution. We brought them in, and they advised as to what we do. The major cause was the animals crossing because there was no water. So our first thing was to dig boreholes. We dug boreholes there. And the second thing we did, working with these farmers, the associations in that local area, led by the chiefs, was to establish a fence. The second one is to establish a regular monitoring, driving with scooters and horses. And we're saying, we are going to pay as government for now, but we would like this to be paid locally, because it's affecting local cattle. And that disease, in foot and mouth, is not only affecting our national economy. It's affecting the local economy, because it means people cannot sell their cattle. One of the reasons we're not released right now, the IOE does not release us to have our free status, is because they want us to compensate. They said, you have got these cattle that you have already marked as having the disease. Yes, you have vaccinated them. But what are you doing about them? Kill them. Kill them. We said, if we kill them, how we need to compensate. And the community said, these are our cattle, so we're paying about, we're busy trying to talk to National Treasury to get about 20 million to kill those cattle and buy other cattle for the community, and then vaccinate for the entire areas there. I will apologize if there is any questions I have on my side left, and I would like them to be followed, because those questions that come from the honorable members do help us build our strategy. And I'll hand over to my colleague on the other question.
Thank you. There was a question on the release of the state land, and that we did not give details on the APP. The state land release project is being monitored at the Interministerial Committee on Land and Agriculture, that is headed or chaired by the Deputy President. And the reason being that this is a multi-stakeholder project. So we hold land, public works hold land, SOEs hold land, municipalities hold land, provinces. So if we confine it to rural development and land reform, you will not be able to see the whole picture. So it's being run at an interministerial a committee level. Hence, we do not put the targets here. There is work that is currently done by the IMC. If you have seen the last briefing on IMC, there was an issue on what we're going to be doing to accelerate the release of the state land. On the issue of agri-parks, I think many members ask the agri-parks. We have a comprehensive status report that we would rather request that you give us time to come and present that year, so that we answer all the questions once with a full briefing on the agri-parks project instead of answering each question. On the issue of communal land, being transferred to private hands, there is no currently, as we see it, legislation for the management of communal land. We have developed the communal land tenure bill. We have consulted with 8 provinces, and one that was remaining is KZN. And now we have been requested to rather draft the tenure policy emanating from the advisory panel report that is still to be released to the public. We have been requested to rather draft the policy on tenure security, and then we'll then refine based on the comments that were received from the traditional leaders when the advisory panel was doing the work. We'll then refine the communal land tenure bill, and it will be taken through the process of approval. Before we have that, we cannot then say we will transfer, because you don't have a policy. You have to have a legislation that regulates how you are going to manage this land
if it's transferred, or depending on what the people, because the government is for the people, do dictate that this is how we want to manage our land after we have finalized the consultations with the public. So we are not going, unfortunately, to say when are we going to give the land for private purposes. There must be a regulation. There must be an act that regulates how that will be done. On the support of one household, 1 hectare, I see you just took the hectares and divided and say we should be able to give this one so much or the other one. There are different assessments that are done. The monies that are put here are based on business plans. So the other household might be having a tractor, or the community might have be having tractors and the others do not have. So we must buy tractor, whereas the others we will not buy tractors. This money is meant for inputs, it's meant for the seeds, the mechanization if they don't have the implements, it's meant for fertilizers, it's meant for all the things that are required to produce at a household level for food security purposes. But there are full business plans. So the monies that are put here are based on those business plans. If you look at Eastern Cape, where you're saying there is number of households, but there is no amount that has been allocated, that is the recapitalization and development commitment that were done. You will see that if you look on 1H, 1HH, there's nothing, but you got the other column, then it's a recapitalization. That budget was meant for recapitalization, not for one household, 1H. The land use master plans, I'm requesting that we be allowed to come present because there's questions on, you want to know the details on it, and we would rather come and give you a presentation on it, on the land use master plan. You will do the details. The details on the state land to be surveyed in Limpopo, we'll request that we email that. We didn't come with it. Do we have stalled projects? Yes, we do. And the plan is, because mostly it's the service providers or the contractors that fail. And when they have failed, we do take them through the proper GCC process, government contract process, where we should recover, we recover. Where we should report them for non-performance to Treasury, we do through the office of the CFO. But we do then re-advertise and get someone to finish. We do have those projects that have failed. The equipment, having received the lowest budget, those are the normal equipment for the office, your normal computers and your office equipment that the officials use. Now, the ones for the tractors will be sitting with your household and with your goods and services depending on the mode of acquisition that will follow when we do acquire tractors or implements for the farmers. That budget, the one you are looking for in terms of SCOA, it's not meant for the public. What is the difference between REED and REID? REED is infrastructure development, so we only deal with infrastructure there. On REID is enterprise and industrial development, where we support enterprises, both for agriculture purposes and non-agriculture purposes. On the NARISEC, the targets that are there is things that we are yet to do. they are not yet done. So you will see we've got the targets of that on the spread of that is on the APP in terms of on the finances. You would find that we have put these targets and aligned them to the amount. On the financial presentation, this one, you will see that we have the spread per province. These are targets that we are still yet to do. On the promise of our former minister, perhaps we need clarity. We don't know. And the Hura, yeah, we also perhaps would need the details of which district is this Hura and just the details of the land so we can check on our system. I think my colleague here will take the one on the deeds, the history of our achievement of those targets.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the deeds, I think first of all, the target was put in place so that we can ensure that those long delays of waiting for the transfer of properties and so forth are dealt with. Secondly, because we understand how the transfer of properties or the change of hands in terms of property acquisitions contributes to our economic development as a country. So in 2015-16, as a department, we achieved 84% of those deeds and documents registered within 7 days. And we are actually counting those ones that they meet the criteria, like there are no errors and so forth. Because the other challenge is based on the conveyancers themselves submitting substandard quality documents. So we count the ones that meet the criteria. So in 2016-17, we achieved 86%. In 2017-18, we achieved 92%. So in the financial year 2018-19, we achieved 93%. And we believe that 95% is still sufficient for us to measure ourselves against that. I think, Chairperson, my acting DG will allow me to also talk to the transport systems in line with the agri-hubs, because she forgot to speak to that one. Our agri-parks, agri-hubs, market, urban, rural market systems, and FPSUs, particularly the farmer production support units that we are targeting to implement in this financial year, we're also going to take into account the issues of transport systems to make sure that there is access to those centers that we're going to put in place. As Minister was saying, that some of the things that we've already put in place, we will refine them. She was meaning to make sure that our FPSUs are also accessible. So we take into account the road transport system. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. And I will request some of the questions that are not answered. The department, can you write them and send to us by tomorrow? Is it possible to get that answer by tomorrow before we debate? Yes,
Chair, there were questions that we did not respond from restitution. Can we just ask CLCC to answer that one?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Acting DG. For the Northwest, I'm not sure. Chairperson talked to the number of 33. That number is referring to claims to be finalized in this current financial year. However, I can report that for Northwest, the previous financial year, there were 17 projects approved for land transfers.
Out of that, it was equating to 21,430 hectares settled. To date, 8,855 hectares of privately owned land has been transferred to claimants. There's 1,195 hectares of state land that was acquired. I'm not sure if it has been transferred to the claimants, but if it has been transferred, it would leave us with a balance of 11,381 hectares still to be transferred. That is for the balance of 11 projects. Most of them, the 90% have been paid, so there's a process of conveyancing still to happen. And by that happening, the 10% will be paid and the farms should be transferred by this financial year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're welcome, Honorable Ndongo. You are early for the next meeting, but you are welcome to our meeting. I hope we did receive all the questions, I mean the answers that we asked. So thank you very much, the department members.
If you allow me, please, Chair, before the department goes, I want to ask for two things. On the for this committee, the inter-ministerial committee that's handling land, state-owned land being transferred, that there is a presentation being done to this committee in the near future, as well as on the question that I've stated on page 20, if I can get a detail on, on the different, because there was said that it's hectares, but it's 1 hectare per one family. So, if we can just get details on this spending, what is this specific spending, because it still doesn't make sense to me. And what criteria is being used to allocate funds to this? Because it's such a wide spectrum, from 39,000 to more than 840,000 rand for one, on the average one household. Because that's how I understand it, is the target in terms of households versus the amount spent. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Smith. I think this, because today we were dealing with two votes, it needs time, but unfortunately we have only 3 hours or 4 hours to deal with those issues. And as you know, that agriculture and rural development are the bone of our economy, and especially as from that we are coming from the rural area, we want to know each and everything. But next time we will create time for that, presentation, because it will help us as the members when we go back to our constituency, when we monitor or our provinces, when we do our oversight, we should know what is happening. But really, the department, thank you very much about this presentation. And I think that's all. The members, can you remain for 5 minutes while the department are leaving us? Thank you very much. Well done. Members, with these 5 minutes, can we adopt our previous meeting? We have quorum. Yes, we do have quorum. Can you adopt our report in minutes?
Thank you, members. The chairperson has asked me to read the two sets of the two reports that we have, and then I need a proposal and a second. A report of the Select Committee on Land Reform, Environment, Mineral Resources and Energy on the budget vote and annual performance plan 2019-20 of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform on their budget vote 39 dated 23rd July 2019. The Select Committee on Land Reform, Environment, Mineral Resources and Energy, having considered budget vote 39 and annual performance plan 2019-2020 of the department, reports that the committee has concluded its deliberations thereon. I need a proposer and a seconder for this report.
Okay.
I propose the chair.
Okay. Honourable Matiwe.
Yes, Chair. I second the adoption of the report.
Okay. What is the
The second report.
Yeah,
the report of the Select Committee on Land Reform, Environment, Mineral Resources and Energy on the budget vote and annual performance plan 2019-20 of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, Fisheries on their budget vote 24 dated 23rd July 2019. The Select Committee on Land Reform, Environment, Mineral Resources and Energy, having considered budget vote 24 and annual performance plan 2019-2020 of the department, reports that the committee has concluded its deliberations thereon. I request a propose and a second. I propose for the adoption.
Did the second.
Members, the minutes before the committee also have to be adopted. The only people that can propose and second the minutes of those people that were here during the last meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We have a quorum. We've got KZN, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Northwest. The members that can propose and second are Mambibi, Ms. Mudise, Mr. Smith, Mr. Arnolds. They were here during the last meeting. So we have a quorum, and we have enough people who were present during the last meeting to propose and second the adoption of the minutes.
Can I propose the adoption of the minutes? Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, honorable members. We are done with our minutes and our report. Thank you very much. Till we meet on the debate. And prepare yourself. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The meetings are done. This is why I'm saying.